Welcome, everyone, to the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. This is episode 63. Host today, Marty Jones. The producers are Owen Woods and Chris Mondragon. And our guests today are Liz Breckbill, the Executive Director for the Alamosa Bicycle Coalition, and Brian Pucciarella, Gen Wild Coordinator and a member of the City of Alamosa Bicycle Working Group. Actually, probably more than a member. I would say he's kind of like the head honcho of the Alamosa Bicycle Working Group. So welcome, Liz and Brian. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Marty. Glad to be back.
Thanks, Marty. Excited to be here.
Good. So, Liz, tell us a little bit about your background and why you wanted to be a part of the executive director for the Alamosa Bicycle Coalition.
Sure. I moved to Alamosa in 2021 and was a full-time Mennonite volunteer, worked at the farm park, worked with a bunch of small nonprofits in the valley, sort of collaborating, doing, you know, outdoor recreation things, environmental science things, and then also youth programming things. And then when I finished my two-year time there, I went off to do some other things, but then came back a year later and was looking for a position that was a little more, I don't know, people-focused and, I don't know, things that I was passionate about and had done in the past. I had a job that was very on the computer all day, never talked to anyone, excited to work with people, do things with my hands, be out and about in the community. And then the Bike Coalition executive director position became available and, yeah, knew the people that had worked there, knew the people that were still working there. So applied, interviewed, and, yeah, it all worked out. And I've been here now for about 4 months.
Fairly new to the job, but yeah. So glad to have you here. Tell us a little bit about, just in general, the Alamosa Bicycle Coalition.
Sure. The main goal of the Alamosa Bicycle Coalition is to provide like affordable and reliable transportation to folks in Alamosa and the San Luis Valley who might not have access to a car. Obviously, there's no public transit, so allowing people to go to their jobs, get to appointments, attend everyday activities, visit their family, go shopping, things like that. So the main thing that the Alamosa Bicycle Coalition does is accept donations from community members, accept donations from community partners or local police department, people that have bikes that they don't want, and then we take those bikes and then fix them up to give out for free to people in the community who are referred to us who need an everyday bike to use just generally in their life to sort of get around, get things done. So that's like the biggest part of the Alamosa Bicycle Coalition. And then additionally, we also are just a shop that's opened to anyone who needs tools and a space to work on their own bike. So if your bike breaks down, you don't know how to fix it, you can come into our shop. We provide the tool benches, everything you need, and the space to work on that. And we'll like work on it alongside with you. So you sort of build those skills as you're fixing up your bike. So I'd say those are sort of our two main programs. And then also we have been involved with Generation Wild, with Brian, and then a group of other organizations here in the Valley, sort of helping with youth programming on bikes, youth programming outdoors, things like that.
And I think you should also mention something about the education mission of the ABC.
Yeah. I mean, when people come in with their bikes, our goal is to sort of teach them what they need to know in order to maintain and keep their bikes functioning for themselves. One of the like pillars of the ABC's mission is to have a community where people like feel able to work on their own bike and others to sort of promote biking, but then also, yeah, give that knowledge to others in the community so that people can stay on their bikes even if they are maybe having issues. Try to focus on that.
Yeah, and in the past there have been several bike rodeos for little kids to. I remember I attended one where a kid had never been on a bike, and by the end of that bike rodeo, he was riding no training wheels. You know, everything was hunky dory.
Nice. Yeah, I have yet to attend a bike rodeo as the executive director. I've planned a few. We have two coming up. Actually, three. Maybe four. They're just getting planned out of nowhere. But we're going to be at the Farm Park Mercadillo August 13th and August 27th. They're both Wednesdays. We'll be there from like 4 to 7 probably. But I will learn the ropes of the bike rodeo and hopefully, yeah, see what that looks like. I'm excited to do it with my coworkers. They've done it in the past, so they sort of know how it goes. And I've heard very positive things about it and keep hearing like community members saying they have seen it or participated in the past, and I have yet to see one or participate in one, so I'm excited for that.
Yeah, pretty exciting. So what other sorts of activities does ABC have planned for the fall?
For the fall, bike rodeos at the farm park. We have another bike rodeo that we're going to be doing up in center. And then also maybe some things that we will do in collaboration with the city. I just got word today that there might be a bike parade going on in collaboration with the city later this fall. And then also another bike rodeo with them on a Friday coming up. I don't yet have the date for that one.
A bike parade?
Yeah.
Brian, you and I should ride in the bike parade.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
As long as I don't have to decorate the bike too much.
Probably not. You can probably do whatever you want to.
Cool.
Yeah. But then additionally, we're going to be tabling at Pride coming up on August 23rd. I recently ordered a bunch of helmets because I was told it was a really great sale and I should just buy a lot of them. And I think I bought too many. So we're going to be handing them out for free and having a helmet painting event at Pride to hopefully encourage people to wear their helmets, but then also, you know, give out free helmets to people in the community that need them because we currently have a lot.
And do you have a variety of sizes?
Yep.
Both adult and children's?
Mm-hmm. Variety of sizes, variety of styles, variety of colors. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Also, things that are happening yet this fall, we have Mechanic Mondays, which is every other Monday. We have one coming up this coming Monday, which I'm not quite sure what the date is.
The 11th?
Yeah, that sounds right, I believe. So we'll have that until the end of October. That's just a 2-hour period every other Monday from 6 to 8. People can come in after work, work on their bikes, get some assistance, get extra parts if they need that, or just fix things up that aren't working quite right. And then we will take a break from that for like the 4 winter months, November through February. But then we'll start back up in the spring again. And then other things that we got going on, we just finished up a master mechanic course. I had sort of coordinated with someone to come in and teach several community members about bike mechanics at a higher level. And it was really helpful for me to attend as I'm still new in the position, trying to figure things out yet. And so that went really well. And then we are kicking off some programming with the Boys and Girls Club. So we'll have Friday programming coming up in a few weeks here.
Oh. Wow, lots going on.
For sure, always.
Excellent. So I know that the Alamosa Bicycle Coalition, before you became the executive director, conducted a bike survey, and you've brought some of that data with you today. So can you give us some information about that survey?
Yeah, I can a little bit. I did just sort of dig this survey file spreadsheet up out of our drive. So I wasn't there when it was implemented, so I don't know everything, but just sort of from what I was able to find, I believe, what do you remember what year it took place?
Well, I think it may have been 2 years ago.
2023 is what I was thinking.
Yeah, gotcha. 2 years ago.
Gotcha. Yeah, but just the information that I got from it, we collected 115 responses and 40% of the participants cited recreation as the number one reason they used their bikes. I think you could sort of select several different ones. So out of, you know, recreation, exercise, getting to work, going shopping, things like that. Recreation was the most common use of bikes for folks that responded to the survey. And then out of the people that responded, the things that they noted as being the biggest issue within Alamosa, things that they would recommend fixing or changing in order to make Alamosa more bike friendly, was eliminating goat heads, which is an impossible and eternal task. And then also having better resources for cyclists, and also having better education, I think both for cyclists and, you know, pedestrians, people driving, I think all around. Understanding bike safety and what bikes are doing on the road was something that people noted as a need in our community. And then there were like a few spots that I pulled, like different states, different streets or different areas that people said really needed bike improvement. Specifically, I think just bike lane improvement. And those were Main Street, State Street, Highway 160, and around Adams State campus. Those were 2 years ago, at least, the priority spots for a lot of folks.
Yeah. And, you know, last year, the Alamosa Citizen also conducted a bike survey, and it sounds like our results are pretty similar to yours. We had 125 surveys that were returned. Some of the interesting things were that we had only a small, like 2.4% of the respondents were between the ages of 18 and 24. The majority, 32%, were between 35 and 44. And then we had another 15% that were between 55 and 64. So it once we got past the age of 44, the numbers were pretty similar, 13%, 15%, 14%, including over 65 plus. Everybody who responded owned a bike. The vast majority owned mountain bikes, then road bikes. A few people had gravel and a few people had e-bikes. 49 of the 125 respondents had one bike. 41 of the respondents had two bikes. 22 had three. 10 had four or more. So, you know, I fall into the two bike category, as long as we count only my bikes and not my wife's bikes. Did your survey have anything about safety? Whether the respondents felt safe on the road?
I don't think like directly. I think it was more so like maybe, yeah, what areas do you wish to improve? And I think several people definitely responded like better education surrounding safety, but that wasn't like a direct question about safety on our survey.
We did have a safety question, and 51% said yes, they feel safe on the road. 49% said no. And interestingly enough, there didn't seem to be a strong correlation between the age of a rider and whether they felt safe on the road. Interest in owning an e-bike was pretty high. About 57% said yes, either I own an e-bike or I would be interested in owning an e-bike. And I think that's a forthcoming trend, don't you, Brian?
Yeah, e-bikes are awesome. I think we'll just continue to see those become more popular.
More and more, yep. In terms of whether Alamosa is a bike-friendly town, our respondents, 47% said yes, 53% said no. So, you know, it's not quite 50-50, but it's close. What we would really like to see, though, is 75% saying that they consider Alamosa a bike-friendly town. And in terms of how to make Alamosa and the San Luis Valley friendlier to cyclists or improvements, there were a whole lot of different responses. But the most common response to that was more bike lanes and more bike trails, including protected bike rails or bike trails, protected bike lanes. More education got quite a few respondents. Better signage, better maintenance of the bike lanes, more bike racks. And that's something that I've noticed, especially in the downtown area. It's hard to find a place where you can safely and securely lock your bike. For sure. You know, you don't just want to lock it by the front wheel or the rear wheel. Because if you have a quick release hub, it's pretty easy for a thief to steal everything but whatever wheel happens to be attached. Yeah. We did have goat heads mentioned as well by some respondents, but the majority was bike lanes, education, signage, better maintenance, and more bike racks.
So one thing we found recently when we did just an audit of bicycle infrastructure in the city is we actually found a lot of bike racks. The problem was they don't always look like bike racks, and sometimes they're really hard to find. So we found a lot that were like kind of hidden behind trees or just on the grass, or I mean, probably 20 or 30 that, you know, we were like, is this a bike rack? And we had to go ask people. And so,
can you give us an example?
Yeah. So along Main Street, for example, right now where they have kind of that weird lane between the parked cars, yep, and the sidewalk, there actually are some bike racks on there, but they just look like posts.
They look decorative.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's one right at the Narrow Gauge Book Co-op, and that's where I lock my bike when I ride down there.
Exactly. And so like that intersection, everyone locks them up at Milagros, but there's actually, yeah, some at every corner. They're just not as obvious. So one of the things we've been working on with the city is just coming up with like a unified look for bike racks.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be great.
I will admit, I ride my bike like everywhere, and I have never seen these bike racks. I'll look for them now, though, and maybe use them.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's plenty of just really bad ones, like Safeway, for example. It's pushed right against the wall in the middle of the sidewalk, and yeah, it's meant to hold like 8 or 10 bikes, and you could fit like maybe one with how they mounted it.
Yeah, you cannot use it the way it was intended.
Yeah,
you have so to put your bike parallel to the rack, which occupies all the spaces.
Clear.
Yeah, and at the post office, the bike rack that's out in front of the post office is broken. So it's no longer secured to the concrete. Well, actually, it is still secured to the concrete, but the frame where it's been welded, the weld is broken. So it's...
Yeah, I just bring my bike into the post office when I'm there.
I try to make it a really quick trip, which I know is not the best.
The other thing I wanted to mention real quick that you touched on, as far as Alamosa being a bicycle-friendly city, so one of the things we found when we started this little advocacy group is that we were rated pretty bad, and a lot of that is because of just the raw data for our bike lanes weren't inputted into this software that Google Maps and Apple Maps and everyone uses, and it's the same kind of raw data that organizations like League of American Bicyclists use to determine if a city is bicycle-friendly or not. So once we got that data added, our scores jumped up quite a bit. I think we went from pretty low in Colorado in terms of bike friendly. We were one of the worst, and then jumped up to like top 20 in the state. And yeah, a lot of that is because of the Levee Trail, which is just, you know, a protected bicycle path almost all the way across town.
Right. Yeah. I think the last data I saw had us ranked higher than other better known cycling cities like Durango. We were rated higher than Durango. So what else is happening with the bicycle working group?
Yeah, so it's been a pretty productive year so far. We set out with some goals, and so far I think we're going to finish having completed them all, it looks like. So yeah, just a few things we've done this year. We completed a service project and touched up the sidewalk along 17 between Splashland and the county road just south of there, which kind of continues that bicycle path all along 17 up to Splashland. So we just cleared that sidewalk back out so kids can get to the pool. We did that in the spring. On Earth Day, we did an audit of the city's bike lanes, and specifically the shape of the paint for all the bike lanes. And between this and a previous audit we had done of bike lanes, you know, one thing we found was, you know, there's probably more bike lanes in town than people realize, and a lot of them were just missing the paint. So I think even you and me were finding bike lanes that we didn't know existed.
Yeah.
And so we've mapped it all out, and we've given that to the city, and whenever they have some spare time, they're going through and restriping all those bike lanes for us.
Yeah, I think it's worthwhile mentioning that the city has been really cooperative with the bicycle working group. In fact, we have a couple of city employees and a county employee who regularly attend the bicycle working group meetings.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely want to give huge credit to the city for working with us and giving us this committee. And I think one of the biggest takeaways so far is, like, a lot of people want to see these improvements happen, but they don't necessarily have the time or the expertise to, like, go out and make all these plans themselves. So that's really been the role we've been able to fill with this bicycle advisory group, is coming up with all these different plans and recommendations for the city that they can work on themselves from there.
And Liz, I should point out, Liz is also a member of the bicycle working group. And she jumped in feet first to get started on this and has been joining us on projects and activities. How can people find the Alamosa Bicycle Coalition? Because it's not immediately obvious.
Yeah, that's true. We are located behind Hobbytown on Main Street. So if you can't find us, you can always just go into Hobbytown and then just walk the whole way through, and then you'll end up in our shop. But also, we do have access through the alleyway, which would be between Main Street and 4th. Yeah. So there's a little alleyway back there that cars can pull in. People go in there all the time to drop off bikes or, you know, pick up things from the various restaurants and other businesses that are along that strip. So we do have an alleyway access, and you could also just go in through Hobbytown. But also, if you can't find either of those things, we also have a phone number, and we can give you, like, step-by-step instructions in real time.
And what is that telephone number?
Oh, that's such a good question. The phone number for the Alamosa Bicycle Coalition is 719-315-5259.
Excellent. And do you have any presence on either a website or social media?
We do not yet have a website. It's something that I think would be really helpful for us, but hasn't yet come to the front burner of things, projects we're working on. But hopefully I can get that up and running within the next year. That would be my goal. But no website yet, but we do have Instagram, social media, just at Alamosa Bicycle Coalition.
Okay. And what are the hours for that people can come into the shop?
Yeah, we're open every week, Tuesday through Friday from 9 to 5. We do take a lunch around noon, but sort of in and out during that hour. And then, like I said, every other Monday we have Mechanic Monday from 6 to 8. But generally 9 to 5, Tuesday through Friday, we should be there. And if you can always give us a call beforehand to make sure that folks are in the office, because, yeah, people have different activities, different events, sort of out and about sometimes. So,
sure,
a call always guarantees it will be around.
And Brian, how long has the City of Alamosa Bicycle Working Group been meeting?
We're in our second year, I think. Yeah, probably 2 years now.
And the meetings are open to the public?
That's a good question. It's so far been kind of invite only, but that's not to say anybody can't come. It's just, been easier to tackle things with the small group.
Sure.
But well, if anyone wants to be part of it, they can definitely reach out to me. My email is brianp@slvgo.com.
Okay. Anything else before we wrap up?
I would just say this fall, be on the lookout. We're going to come out with an educational campaign with the city and Liz with ABC. We're putting together just some resources for cyclists and for drivers, just to kind of educate the public on what's legal, what people should be doing on bikes, what they shouldn't be doing, what cars should be doing and not doing around bikes and all that kind of stuff. So we're hoping to roll that out this fall, probably September, October.
Excellent. And keep your eyes open for the bike parade. That's sure to be a big hit, a popular thing for everybody.
Yeah. I'm not yet sure the date, but I think it should be a lot of fun. And yeah, looking forward to this fall events that we're going to have at the farm park. Catch us there or always pull up to our shop. Happy to have folks come in and work on bikes.
Excellent. So we've been talking with Liz Breckbill, the executive director for the Alamosa Bicycle Coalition, and Brian Pucciarella, the Gen Wild coordinator, member of the SLV Go, and kind of the head honcho for the bicycle working group here in Alamosa. Thank you both for coming in and sharing the information.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you, Marty.
So next up, some outdoor conditions for August, but first, a quick word from our sponsors.
Hey SLV, mark your calendar for the September 13th, 3rd annual SLV Battle of the Bowls Chili Cook-Off, hosted by Alamosa KOA. Competition will be from 2 to 4 p.m. on the 13th of September. Cooks from across the valley will be cooking up mouth-watering red and green chilies and, of course, some salsa and competing in this heated but friendly battle. All proceeds go to Care Camps Foundation, a nonprofit that funds oncology camps, which give kids with cancer the chance to experience the healing powers of the outdoors. There's still time to enter the chili competition. Just call KOA at 719-589-9757.
Cumbres and Toltec Scenic Railroad is saying thanks to its surrounding communities. From August 19th through the 31st, locals get 50% off excursions on the Cumbres and Toltec Scenic Railroad. The heart of the Cumbres and Toltec is the fine people of Chama, New Mexico, Antonito, Colorado, and the surrounding communities who have supported the historic railroad for generations. To show our appreciation, Cumbres and Toltec is offering a 50% discount to locals who live within an 80-mile drive of either Chama or Antonito on All Aboard Chama Excursions, All Aboard Antonito Excursions, Chama Limited, Antonito Limited, and Cumbres Express. This discount is valid on coach class seating only and cannot be applied online. So call the reservation line at 1-888-286-2737 to book. That's 1-888-286-2737 for 50% off excursions for locals.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Citizen. We have some outdoor conditions for you. Quote, "There's just no water in the system," unquote, says Cleve Simpson, the general manager of the Rio Grande Water Conservation District. He was talking to us on Tuesday, August 5th, about the startling conditions of the upper Rio Grande Basin that showed a flow of 36 cubic feet per second at the Alamosa County line this morning, the 5th of August. The river was flowing 15 CFS at the Lobatos Bridge. And if you have been walking or riding a bicycle or even driving through Alamosa, you know that that's a really low flow. The warnings about this year's dryness go back to February, when we saw a string of 60-degree weather days and then more record heat back in April. Fast forward to August and what's been a relatively dry summer with less than an inch and a half of accumulated precipitation, and we see very little water in the river. And it's not just here, it's up above as well. For example, we just looked up the data for Rio Grande Reservoir. It's less than half full. Owen was at Terrace Reservoir this past weekend, and he said it's really low also. Much of the Great Basin, that includes more than just the Colorado, is under intense fire restrictions. And we're going to give you some more information about fire in the news section. But some fishing reports from ARC anglers on the Arkansas, the Middle Basin between Buena Vista to Salida. On August 1st, clarity has returned to the river. It is fishing well right now between Buena Vista and Salida. Dry and dry dropper fishing is very productive right now, the result of the current flows and prime summer hatches. Great edge habitat is open to the fish, so expect trout to vacate faster areas of the current and move to velocity shelters along the banks and amid submerged midstream structures. Fish that drop into the depths below faster water are hard to reach, but the fish along the banks are prime targets for a shallow nymph or dry dropper rig. Streamer fishing is also very productive now, particularly from a boat. Anglers should also consider beefing up on leader material, as the need for stealth is long past and heavier material will come in handy trying to work fish out of the summer flows. We advise a conservative approach for wade anglers as the current is still deceptively swift. And now for some news. A climber was rescued Sunday from the Hourglass Gully below Little Bear Peak after being struck by a microwave-sized rock and falling more than 30 feet. According to the Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue Team, the climber was not wearing a helmet and was found unresponsive and had suffered serious injuries. They were flown to a Front Range hospital, and there is no word on the current condition. The Colorado Air National Guard assisted the Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue, AVSAR, with a hoist by using a Black Hawk helicopter and two Air National Guard hoist technicians. The Hourglass and Little Bear Peak are considered to be some of the most dangerous terrain in not just the Sangre de Cristos, but the Rocky Mountains as a whole. Extreme and frequent rock fall through the Hourglass create dangerous conditions for climbers. The route through the Hourglass is considered a Class 4 route. Now we have some updates on fires. Three new fires have sparked early this week on the western slope. The LaRue Fire in Delta County is burning just over 120 acres right now with 0% containment. It's unknown how the fire started, but a 911 call on Sunday, August 3rd, determined there was a single tree fire that had spread. Department of Fire Prevention and Control San Luis Valley Engine 3321 is currently assisting on this fire. Meanwhile, the Elk Fire near Meeker in Rio Blanco County is burning more than 13,000 acres with 0% containment. SLV Engine 3322 is working this fire. Lightning has been determined to be the cause of this fire, and as of Monday, three structures were lost. Governor Jared Polis has declared a state of emergency in response to this fire. The Lee Fire, which is just east of the Elk Fire, is also burning more than 14,000 acres in intense conditions. Dry vegetation and wind are creating high-risk challenges for fire crews. And here are some updates on some of the other fires that have been in the headlines. The South Rim Fire of the Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park is now 52% contained after burning more than 4,200 acres. Lightning was determined to be the cause of this fire. The Laguna Fire, burning in the Santa Fe National Forest in New Mexico, is burning at 78% containment. After burning more than 17,000 acres, fire crews have been able to hold fire lines and contain much of the fire. Dry weather and conditions haven't let up, though, and fire crews are still working day and night to combat this fire. Finally, the Dragon Bravo Fire burning along the north rim of the Grand Canyon is only 13% contained after burning more than 123,000 acres. The north rim will remain closed for the remainder of the 2025 season. Fire crews have been able to slow the spread, but low relative humidity in the area has allowed the fire to continue to burn. And if you live in the San Luis Valley, you have no doubt noticed smoke from a variety of these fires coming into the valley, reducing our visibility and creating conditions that are somewhat hazardous for outdoor exercise, especially if you have breathing issues. In other news, according to Colorado Parks and Wildlife, there are at least six new gray wolf pups in one of Colorado's newly established one-year pack. There may be more pups within other packs, but CPW said it's difficult to get a gauge on those population numbers when the pups are small. As pups emerge from dens, wildlife officials can get a better number of pack members. Though seven wolves have died since being translocated from British Columbia and Oregon, with the new pups, the estimated number of wolves in Colorado is now around 30. And a mountain lion that killed a dog in Boulder was relocated instead of being euthanized. Colorado Parks and Wildlife tracked the big cat for nearly 6 days until they were able to sedate and relocate the cat. The mountain lion attacked a couple's dog on their nightly walk. the mountain lion, then took the dog to a prey cache nearby. CPW found the lion in the same area when they were able to dart it. Boulder County has one of the highest densities of mountain lions in the western United States. CPW says that encounters with mountain lions in Boulder County are often the highest in the country. And I remember going to a wedding, an outdoor wedding up in Boulder County, and we saw a mountain lion up on a ridge above the wedding site. Pretty exciting, but certainly made us pay attention to what was going on. And now I'll look at some upcoming outdoor events. The annual Suds for SAR block party is Saturday, August 16th from 3 p.m. to 10 p.m. on the corner of San Juan and Main Street. Local brews, live music, a cornhole tournament, and a silent auction to support the team will be front and center this year. The block party is a fundraising event for the Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue Team, and proceeds go to the team to continue to support the life-saving work they do. In terms of music, the Celtic Knots will open the event, followed by That 90s Band, and Lucky Overton and the Yardangs will close the night out. The cornhole tournament starts at 5:30 p.m. and ends around 7:30 p.m. The event is free to attend for all ages, and it's a great block party, so you should definitely show up. Show up and support AFSAR. Celebrate the completion of the Outdoor Classroom and Recreation Enhancement Commemoration at the Lobatos Bridge, September 26th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Years in the making, the project is designed to increase user-friendliness and educational opportunities at the historic site. The Lobatos Iron Bridge is the southernmost bridge in Colorado that spans the Rio Grande. A place of great significance, you can find the bridge on County Road G in Costilla County. And that ends this episode of the Outdoor Citizen podcast. The Outdoor Citizen is produced and edited by Chris Mondragon and Owen Woods and published by AlamosaCitizen.com. You can listen to the show wherever you stream your podcast. If you have an outdoor adventure you'd like to share, or if there are topics you'd like to hear about in a future episode, send an email to info@alamosacitizen.com. As always, we want to thank Don Richmond for his song Sea Turtle and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. And until next time, this is your host, Marty Jones, saying get outdoors, enjoy this vast valley and the recreational opportunities that we have. See you outside. Thanks for listening.